Lisboa, Bruxelles,
Berlin,
Warsaw.
Europe is us with Dino.
Europe is us, but who are we? Stay with us and you'll find out. I'm Dino, a journalist from Slovenia, and I'm happy to be here with you again. This is our 47th episode of our Europe is Us podcast, a podcast made by youth for youth. The topic of the day is far-right rise. And our guest of the day is Martin Bogomilov-Penov, a young European ambassador from Bulgaria and a student at the University of Manchester. He is much, much more, but I don't want to even try to recite everything he does because I might forget something. Martin, the floor is yours.
Yeah, hello. So my name is Martin Penov. I'm from Bulgaria originally, and I graduated a bachelor's in international relations in the UK. After which I came back to Bulgaria to work as a consultant in the international cooperation sector. But aside from that, my free time, I'm also the vice president of JEF Europe, or the Young European Federalists, where I'm responsible for all sorts of fun topics like human rights, the rule of law, defense and security, and also currently working extensively on Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus, and everything with these topics in these countries.
Thank you, Martin. Now, we are dealing with a very specific topic, which could be discussed from several different points of view. I'd like to hear some of them, and we are going to travel a little bit, as we always do in our podcast. This time, first off, to Romania, to hear from Cosmin Tugui, a student at the Faculty of Law of Alexandru Ioan Cuza University in Iasi, Romania. What does he think that young people should do to better understand politics and the far-right rise? Young people should inform themselves, analyze the promises, because there will obviously be many promises. But again, they should inform themselves. I personally read articles, news or statements from both directions equally, and I try to be rational first of all, and see how realistic these statements, these promises are. From Romania back to Bulgaria and Martin. Martin, how can we actually recognize the far right? What is the far right? How do you see it?
Yeah, with these things, it's always been interesting how different it is in every single country. You know, coming from the Balkans, obviously I have a very different idea of what a right-wing or left-wing party is, but I think at least now with the European elections coming up, you kind of have a general idea of what these parties are. They are very conservative, reactionary. They have an increasingly authoritarian bent. They try to play on people's emotions in order to gain popularity. They love using populism and promising the world, even though whenever they get to power, these things that they promise rarely happen in the end. And now, especially over the past few years, with all the different crises that young people have faced around Europe, we are seeing that they've started almost consolidating into a general narrative that they are pushing everywhere.
Thank you, Martin. Let's travel once again, this time to Germany, to hear from Laurin John, who is a 22-year-old co-host of the German Europe is Us podcast. Is he concerned about the rise of the far right?
Natürlich bin ich besorgt über den Aufstieg der Rechtsextremen in Europa, allein schon die Ergebnisse in den Niederlanden.
Of course I am concerned about the rise of the far right in Europe. The results in the Netherlands alone and the AfD's current poll results alone worry me, especially as a young person, because I think that many of the points made by such parties or conservative movements have simply not been thought through to the end. And that worries me personally, because it will ultimately affect my future, like the AfD, for example, which is in favor of Germany leaving the EU. I can't see why that would make sense, and I just find it depressing that people think to themselves, hey, this party represents my interests. I just think that many very conservative currents simply don't think things through to the end, and that makes me personally a bit angry.
Bei vielen sehr konservativen Strömen einfach nicht zu Ende gedacht wird, und das macht mich persönlich auch ein bisschen sauer.
From Germany back to Bulgaria, back to you, Martin. What are the biggest threats that the far right brings with itself? Could we actually lose our unity, the one that we've been building for years? Could we maybe lose the European Union?
So what Europe has achieved throughout the past decades is nothing short of amazing. The EU, even in the not very coherent way it's structured right now, is probably the biggest achievement that we've had. Like the freedoms that it gives us as young people to travel, to live anywhere, they're unparalleled anywhere else in the world. But we've also seen in some countries like Hungary, where populists have gotten into power, and what that results in. Policies being vetoed left and right, using important policy areas like sending it to Ukraine as taking these areas hostage in order to win concessions from other countries, putting the entire process of progress and integration into a deadlock so they can get what they want. And now imagine if this happens with multiple countries and the whole project is suddenly at risk. I think that the EU can survive this, and even with the current rise that's happening with the European elections coming up and their projections of them getting around a quarter of the seats, I still think at least our democratic institutions are going to overcome this. But we also need to keep in mind, you know, why these things are happening in the first place. Why are they getting so popular? And to educate people on actually the risks that that Europe is going to face if we ever actually let them get anywhere near the power influence.
Let's get to know you a bit more personally, Martin. I have three short questions for you. What is your favorite memory?
Favorite memory? That's a really hard one, actually. Like, the past few years have been so dynamic. Everything's changed so much every year, so it's hard to pinpoint. But, you know, I think I'll go with the European Youth Event back in 2021. The UAE in Strasbourg at the European Parliament, because that was, I think, the first major one I attended after COVID restrictions started getting lifted. And it was one of the first opportunities I had to meet a lot of friends from different parts of Europe who are active in GIF. Just this international experience after spending months and months in isolation in Manchester when I was studying at the time. So that's something I always probably remember. And also because I had to cross multiple countries just to get there because of how complicated traveling to Strasbourg is, as everyone knows.
I is really a huge event. I've been there, loved it. One of my favorite memories as well. My second question is, what is your biggest fear?
Probably unsurprising, given all I've said so far. It's definitely war. Because war is something I think a lot of people have gotten complacent with not being real, in a sense, in Europe, for many, many years, and in some countries' case, decades. This is a bit different, again, in the Balkans, because you had the Yugoslav wars, you had Georgia, you had Transnistria, and so on. But in general, in Europe, a lot of people don't actually believe that war is possible. And, you know, 2 years ago, we found out that we are wrong. It is possible. But now what we've been seeing in the past few months is actually that even though there's a massive war raging literally a few hours ride from where I am right now, a lot of people still refuse to take it seriously or believe that it'll affect us in any way. And I am not as optimistic, so to speak. And even if it doesn't, Europe still needs to be prepared. We still need to be prepared because, you know, we've invested so much through the European Union and having a peaceful, prosperous continent. And now we are risking it all on the hope that things are just going to calm down at one point on their own and we don't need to think about it anymore.
And your biggest wish?
Biggest wish. I want young people to actually turn out and vote in the European elections this year. That's the biggest. And I'm saying that because in Bulgaria's case, but not only, voter turnout is abysmal. And by abysmal, I mean around 30% every time. And when you don't have people taking democracy seriously and accepting it as a duty, something they actually participate in, but simply a process that just happens to their country, and once the elections are over, it just passes away as just an event, you risk that losing that democracy point. And with us, like being young, you know, these are our countries, you know, this is our union, this is our continent. We're going to be living here. Whatever happens now is going to be affecting us. And given all the different challenges that Europe has been facing in the past few years, now it's really important actually for young people to step up and say, you know, this is our future you're playing with here. We need a say, and we want to make sure that you're not just gonna waste it away for some short-term goals and then just leave us to deal with it in 10 to 20 years time. So yeah, that's what I want young people to accept that, you know, this is their home. They have the power to decide how it's going to be run, how it's going to change, and to use that power to actually push for politics of the future that are actually going to create a prosperous Europe again after all this ends.
Martin, I believe we both agree that the far-right rise is happening under very specific circumstances, quite violent circumstances of many war conflicts happening around us. Is this an advantage for the rise of the far right? Is this an accelerator of their success?
It definitely is, sadly. What every populist party loves is a good crisis, because they can use it in order to, they can feed on the fear that that creates in people, on the uncertainty it creates, especially with young people, because young people are usually the hardest hit by most crises, especially when it comes to, now we've seen with COVID, with inflation, with the war in Ukraine, and all the economic effects that's had, young people always tend to be hit the worst. And these parties, they can prey on this. They can use it to first target the traditional parties in power and to use this as an argument against them to show why they can offer a new alternative and to overpromise in order to present themselves as a valid alternative. So every time in the past few years, we had another major crisis come up, we've seen a slight uptick in their popularity. And this has been an ongoing trend since at least 2016. And now with the war in Ukraine, it's slightly different depending on the country. But in general, you can see in Bulgaria, you can see it in Slovakia and Romania, in even some parties in Poland, where there's this narrative being pushed that, you know, the EU or this government is going to send us to war if we vote for them. So vote for us and we will not be supporting Ukraine and we will have peace. You know, that's how a lot of these pro-Russian right-wing parties have operated. And it's actually had some results for some of them. They have received some support out of at least the pro-Russian segments of the population. And now we're seeing with the European Parliament elections that they are also going to have a surge in support, not as dramatic, I hope, as many people are making out to be. But it's undoubtable that they have found a space for their politics to flourish in a way. And it's up to us to show why they are simply abusing the situation, that this is not the alternative that we need to work towards.
And what are the alternatives that we have available? What is happening on the other side, on the extreme left? I mean, you've been quite active in your country. You also see things from a European perspective as you're working with Jeff. Is the extreme left rising as well as an answer?
Well, there's a centrist alternative for sure. We are probably going to have another grand coalition in the European Parliament next elections between the center, the center left, and the center right, as we have now with the EPP, Renew Europe, and SND. So that will likely continue, albeit with a smaller majority. And that's important because it shows that there's a level of resilience in moderate politics that they can overcome even after so many crises that we've faced since 2019, that there's still a majority support for these types of more reasonable politics than just a simple reactionary politics we have from both the far left and the far right. The far left is a interesting topic because there's a huge difference between the left-wing parties that you have traditionally in Western Europe and the ones you have in the post-communist countries like Bulgaria. Because we don't have a progressive left. In Bulgaria's case, for instance, there's only one left-wing party which has ever had any kind of power and is represented in parliament at any rate, and that's the Bulgarian Socialist Party, which is a pro-Russian, incredibly conservative, homophobic, transphobic. They made an entire election campaign over protecting traditional values. It's exactly what you'd expect from a far-right party in Western Europe, funnily enough. And this is something that we also see now with in Slovakia as well, and in a few other countries in the region because of this history where you had these parties being the only party in power for decades on end. And at, what's the end result? Well, obviously they're conservative. Because to them, conservative means going back to the previous status quo. And on the other end, you have the right wing in these countries, which is incredibly fractured as a result because it encompasses everything else, from liberals to green politics to conservatives to populists. Everything is there pitted against what used to be the communists back in the day, essentially, because a lot of these parties initially were founded as a kind of a response to those sort of totalitarian governments back then. So it's a very different situation, I'd say, between the West and East. And you can see it kind of in the European Parliament as well, how they situate themselves, because you have the left in the European Parliament, which is mostly Western European parties, actually, while a lot of these Eastern European parties, which have a lot of these reactionary tendencies, actually try to present themselves as moderate and ended up sitting with other moderate Western parties and Party of European Socialists. I mean, Sergei Stanishev from Bulgaria, the Bulgarian Socialist Party, was their chairman for a decade. And whether they've been successful is in reinventing themselves is another matter. In the East, I wouldn't say so. But in the West, I do think that at least as of right now, they are not as comparatively bad or as big of a threat as the far right, because you can see at with election polls that in most of Western Europe right now, parties like Le Pen's party in France, Vox in Spain, or now Meloni in Italy and so on, they are having even more success than the far right in Eastern Europe. Which is something that we need to take note because, back in a few years ago, around the migrant crisis in 2016, 17, the stereotype in the media was that, totalitarianism, dictatorship, conservatism, and all these things, they were a problem in Eastern Europe and Central Europe, with Hungary and Orban and peace in Poland. These were like the poster childs of this kind of wave of right-wing totalitarian parties and dictatorships popping up everywhere, especially with Putin and Lukashenko in Russia and Belarus. But now we've actually seen them turn the tide around and you have liberal forces coming to power now in Eastern Europe and populists getting more and more popular with every election cycle in the West.
Martin, thank you very much. And thank you all for your attention. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and listen to what we have to say because Europe is us.
Lisboa, Brussels, Sofia, Warszawa.